Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Zimbabwe amidst a vicious civil war and became a safari guide. On March 9, 1996, an 8,000-pound bull hippopotamus ripped his body and his life apart. He believes that you are the sum of your choices. You are exactly who, what, and where you choose to be in life. He's a real-life Crocodile Dundee. His name, Paul Templer. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Paul Templer, a real-life Crocodile Dundee. Paul, welcome. An honor to have you.
Yes, good evening, Jack. Thank you. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood growing up in Zimbabwe and your mom and your dad?
Absolutely. Jack, I grew up in Zimbabwe. At the time, it was called Rhodesia. And as you mentioned a little earlier, I grew up in the midst of a vicious civil war. Despite all of that, my earliest childhood memories are right out of the pages of a boy's own adventure story. I was surrounded by wild animals and army guys. The army guys, because my father was a senior ranking army officer, and life was good. Life was a grand adventure.
You've got a great way about you. Can you teach us how to speak like you do? Is that easy to do? So, what's the biggest thing, Paul, you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
Jack, my dad, as I mentioned, high-ranking army officer. So from him, I learned about leadership. I learned about loyalty. I learned about discipline, commitment. He was a stickler for manners and etiquette. And I learned these things not just from what he said, but from watching him, the way he moved through life and the responses he evoked and in the people he interacted with. My mum, too, wow, incredible lessons from her. Mum was, has been, is, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess always will be, a champion for those less fortunate than her. She spent most of her life dedicating to setting up and running programs for folks with special needs. I would say the gift that she gave me was she's inspired me to live in this question that if I can make a difference, if I can help people, how can I not?
How did you become a safari guide? And if you will, can you take us on a safari ride?
Absolutely, Jack. I became a safari guide as a result of a series of misadventures. I'd spent a few years gallivanting around the globe. I'd served in the British Army. I'd traveled quite extensively. And I'd gone back to Africa to figure out what to do next. I was in my early 20s. And I went on a safari. I went on a canoe safari and a rafting trip, a whitewater rafting trip just below Victoria Falls. And I was hooked. I decided that that's what I wanted my future to include. So I set about getting myself licensed in as many different areas in the safari industry as I could. So a typical day on safari, the common variables, whether you were on a horseback safari, a driving safari, a walking safari, canoeing, kayaking, whitewater rafting, would start with an early morning rise. It would include time where we slowed down and connected with nature and with our environment. It would include time stepping beyond our comfort barriers to interact with some of the wildlife, without the fences, without the the security that one gets in the Western world, because most of our clients were from the Western world, and they were going there to experience all that Africa had to offer. So we would take them on a emotional roller coaster, where they would be awed, inspired, and generally blown away by the beauty that is Africa.
Is there one or two animals that are just, they connotate just awe when you see them?
I would have to say an elephant, which may appear cliched, but something so large and so majestic. A lion, when it's roaring at night, it doesn't matter how many nights I've spent under the stars, when I hear a lion roaring just outside camp, it gets my body tingling. So lions, elephants, hippopotami, big, solid brutes.
15 feet long, 5 feet high, up to 8,000 pounds?
Absolutely.
They kill more people than any other...
That's what I understand.
We're talking to Paul Templer. When we come back, we're going to ask him about March 9th, 1996. He refers to that day as a bad day at the office. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Paul Templer. Paul, let's go back. March 9th, 1996. You describe it as a bad day at the office, if you will.
Indeed. Jack, I remember waking up that morning. I was quite excited and more than a little nervous, too. You see, as I lay back in my pillow, I wondered what the day held in store. There'd been this pride of lion that had been making something of a nuisance of themselves. They'd been attacking and eating some of the local villagers, and I was going in with a team to take care of the problem. Well, things didn't go the way that I'd hoped they would that morning, and by about lunchtime, we knew that we weren't going to be doing any hunting that day. So now I had a tough choice to make. Should I spend the rest of my day sitting back in the pub, watching a much-anticipated cricket match on the television? Or should I go and lead a canoe safari for Max? He was a friend of mine, a fellow guide, who'd come down with malaria. Well, a few hours later, as I leant back in my canoe, I knew I'd made the right choice. There I was, drifting down the mighty Zambezi River in one of three 18-foot-long Canadian-style canoes. I had a middle-aged German couple in my canoe, whilst Ben and Evans, they were two of my apprentice guides. They were in each of the other two canoes, and they had a young French couple in each of their boats. Mac, the remaining guide, a dear and old friend of mine, had come along. He was paddling in what we affectionately referred to as his little red crocodile bait kayak. It was about a 12-foot-long, single-person whitewater kayak. We were going on a sundowner canoe trip that day. As I sat there, the idea was that we would end just above Victoria Falls, and the plan for the clients was just that they sit back, relax, and enjoy being paddled down the river. Their instructions from me were to enjoy the game viewing. After all, there were elephants, buffalo, crocodiles, and so much more for them to see. At one point, we came across a pod of about a dozen hippos. They just sat there, wallowing in the shallows. I started to tell the German folks in my boat a little bit about hippos. I didn't want to scare them, so I didn't mention, like we were just talking about, that hippopotamuses are responsible for killing more people every year than any other animal. Instead, I thought I'd give them some facts. I told them how this fully grown bull hippo that we were looking at could grow up to be about 15 feet long, 5 feet tall, weigh 8,000 pounds. I try to put it in perspective. At the time, I drove a Land Rover, and a fully grown bull hippo would be about the same length and weigh about twice what my Land Rover did. For some reason, that didn't seem to reassure the German folks too much. Anyway, I got about as close as I planned to get to the hippos before pulling our little group together and laying out my plan of evasive action before leading the way to the narrow channel that would take us safely past the danger. When I got to the channel, I stopped and turned to make sure that everyone was where they were supposed to be. And sure enough, Ben was right behind me with his clients, and Mac was paddling alongside him. Evans, though, had dropped back a bit. So to give him a chance to catch up, we all just set our paddles down and drifted. The scenery there was just spectacular. As we floated down this little jungle line channel, just ahead of us we could see the mist rising up above Victoria Falls. That it was dusk and the world was so softly backlit just added to the whole experience. I remember we all just took a moment to sit back and relax and to soak in the peace and the tranquility. Poof! There was this really loud noise, a noise that I knew all too well, and I turned just in time to see Evans flying through the air before he splashed into the river. My mind sprung into crisis mode. First things first, I needed to get everyone to safety. Fortunately for me, though, there was a cluster of rocks nearby. Ben, get everyone to the rocks! Evans, hang in there. I'm coming to get you. I pulled up alongside him, and I leant over to grab a hold of his outstretched hand, and as our fingers almost touched, the water between us just erupted. My world went dark and strangely quiet. A few very long seconds ticked by as I tried to figure out what was going on. You see, from my waist up, I wasn't dry, but I wasn't wet either, not like my legs were. And there was this incredible pressure crushing down on my lower back. I struggled to break free. It was a pretty pathetic attempt at first, what with my arms pinned to my sides and my legs flailing about in the water. But somehow or other, I managed to get one hand free, and feeling around, I felt the bristles on a hippo's snout. Well, at least now I knew where I was. I was head first, up to my waist, down a hippo's throat. It was a little weird. Given everything that was going on, somehow or other I managed to stay calm, and I did what I could to get away, pushed and pulled, and at one point the monster loosened his grip long enough for me to escape. Bursting to the surface, I sucked in a lungful of fresh air, and I came face to face with Evans, the chap I'd been trying to rescue. We need to get out of here! I turned and swam away, and I got the sense that all was not well. So I stopped and turned and looked back, and sure enough, Evans was where I'd left him. He wasn't going anywhere. Terror and panic had quite literally overwhelmed him. His eyes were like saucers as he struggled to stay afloat. I turned and swam back for him, and I was just moving in for the classic lifesaver's hold when, wham, I was hit from below. Once again, I was up to my waist on the hippo's throat. At least this time I could see what was going on. Though this time my legs were trapped, my hands were free, so I went for my gun. I used to carry a .357 Magnum revolver with me, just in case something like this ever happened. It was no use to me, though. I didn't even come close to grabbing a hold of it as the hippo thrashed me about. In fact, all I really accomplished during that phase of the attack was to almost drown. Then the hippo threw me away again, giving me yet another chance to escape. This time when I came to the surface, I looked around and, good, no Evans. I thought for sure that Mac or Ben must have come to rescue him whilst I was busy distracting the beast. And now I needed to get the heck out of there. And I was making pretty good progress when I looked over mid-stroke and I saw the monster just charging in towards me, his mouth wide open as he zeroed in before scoring a direct hit, his huge tusks tearing into my torso as he drove me underwater. This time my legs hung out of one side of his mouth. My arms, my head, and my shoulders outside the other. There we go again. I punched, clawed. Nothing. Nothing I did seemed to have any effect whatsoever. I remember at one point he threw me up into the air and I did this crazy sort of half twist before falling back into his mouth. When he caught me, he bit down so hard that I thought for sure he was going to chomp me in half. One of the clients later said that it was like watching a vicious dog trying to rip apart a rag doll. For me, everything was happening in slow motion. When we went underwater, I held my breath. When we were on the surface, I sucked in air. All the while, I held onto the tusks that bore through me, just so that my flesh didn't tear so much as he shook me all about. Then the thrashing stopped, and the hippo dove for deep water. Everything went still. This led to quite possibly the most surreal moment in my life, when, lying at the bottom of the river, I remember laying there and I was looking up and I could see the different hues of green and yellow. The sunlight was shimmering on the water's surface. There I was, pinned inside the hippo's mouth, his tusks boring through me, and I thought to myself, I wonder who can hold their breath the longest. I'm not sure how long we stayed there. One thing I can tell you, though, is that time passes very slowly in the jaws of a submerged hippo. As I lay there, I watched my blood mingle with the water, and I wondered which would happen first, if I'd bleed to death or if I'd drown. Rested, the hippo surged towards the surface and flung me away, giving me yet another chance to escape. The next thing I knew, the front of Mac's little red crocodile bait kayak was inches from my face, and I managed to grab a hold of the handle on the boat's nose as Mac, just showing the most incredible bravery, risked his life to save mine. To me, it was nothing short of a miracle that we made it to the rock. I tried to reassure everyone. All right, folks, you need to stay calm. Everything's going to be okay. They all just stood there and stared at me with this look of horror and disbelief. You see, having just witnessed the attack and looking at what was left of me laying there, none of them could believe that I was still alive. Now, I've got to tell you, they were all looking quite concerned. I guess they had every reason to be concerned. After all, Evans was missing. We presumed he was either dead or injured. My radio, first aid kit, and gun, they were all gone. We had six scared clients, two canoes, one kayak, and one paddle. We were perched on a cluster of rocks in the middle of a crocodile-infested Zambezi River with an angry hippo for company. And then, as if things weren't bad enough, I made the mistake of looking at myself. Ugh, I was a mess. In fact, my body was punched so full of holes that I could see why everyone had that dead man walking look on their face as they stared at me. All told, it would be fair to say that I was having a pretty bad day at the office. Anyway, 8 hours later, let's see, I was in an operating table a few hundred miles away getting my arm chopped off. Mac, Ben, and the clients were all safely in their beds, fast asleep. And Evans? Evans was dead. So, Jack, that was my March the 9th of 1996.
Paul Templer, quite a chap. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WGR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
We're talking to Paul Templer, who's been the subject of many documentaries produced by the Discovery Channel, National Geographic, and the BBC. Paul, a few weeks ago, we had another amazing guest, Bob Woodruff of ABC News, who nearly lost his life in Iraq in a tank one day with an IED. And he's a living miracle. You are a living miracle. Do you believe in miracles, Paul? Paul Templer?
Absolutely, Jack. Jack, the fact that I'm here today, I think, is testament to that. And the fact that I survived the day when all the doctors, nurses, paramedics, rescue techs who dealt with me were very clear that I shouldn't have survived. And then the way that life has unfolded since then, it's been filled with miracles. It's a long way of saying yes, absolutely.
If there's a listener tonight whose world has just come undone, mm-hmm. feels bitter about God, doesn't know if he can hold on or she can hold on, go farther, what do you say to that listener tonight?
All I can offer that listener, Jack, is my own experience and the way that I've moved through those moments, because there have been a few of them. There's been waking up the morning after they'd amputated my arm. There's been sitting in a waiting room for the news on how my four-month-old daughter was doing as she had an eight-hour surgery to remove a brain tumor. Life has been filled with these days where one wonders how one can go on. And I'd like to be able to throw some blithe commentary out about have faith, even though that has been the cornerstone of how I've got through. My faith has always been associated with actions in those darkest hours. And I boil it down to its simplest elements. Maybe that's a function of so many years in the great outdoors. I find someone to thank. I find someone to be kind to. I find someone to help out. Because I've found that somehow or other shifts the story that I'm caught up in, and I stop being a victim. Because a very wise man, the surgeon, Dr. Nube, he was the chap who chopped off my arm. One day when I was having a pretty dark day, he came and stood by my bed and looked me square in the eye. And he said, "Paul, always remember this. You're the sum of your choices. You're exactly who, what, and where you choose to be in life." Now, Jack, at that time, I wasn't that impressed with what the doc had to say. I thought, it's pretty easy for you to sit there and say that, doc. You're not the one sitting here with bits and pieces being cut off of you. Much the same as that listener you referenced out there. I have no idea what they're going through. For me, at that time, it was far easier for me just to sit there and blame everyone and everything else for all of the bad things that had happened to me. It was far easier for me not to be accountable and take responsibility for my life. But he showed me that if I take a few actions, if I see that I have choices, I show a little gratitude, life does indeed continue to unfold in the most miraculous of ways.
Paul Templer, let's go back to March 9th, 1996.
Sure.
And God says, "I'll give you a choice again. Mm-hmm. You can either stay and watch that cricket game, and you don't have to go substitute for your friend Mac on the safari ride."
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell God?
I'd have to take a deep breath. And I wouldn't trade the life I live today, Jack, for anything. I have absolute faith in God, so I would have to say, "Thy will be done, Lord, if that is thy will." But if I get to vote, if I get to share my preference, I would take the life I live today, despite all its hardship, its challenges, its agonies, its defeats. I wouldn't trade where I am today and the life I live today for anything.
I've often said I'm not the host of this show, I'm the beneficiary. This show is like a nourishment for my soul. And one of the things that has struck me is, time after time, the worst thing that ever happened to a person, they ultimately realize is the best thing that ever happened to them. Mm-hmm. You believe that. Why is that, Paul Templer?
I would just say that through my experiences and my family's experiences, that it's the darkest times are the ones that have opened up the most incredible opportunities and possibilities. they give us a chance to see and be who we can be. You know, Jack, I mentioned my daughter, Erin. The surgery she had to remove the brain tumor, it didn't accomplish everything we'd hoped it would. And saying that, we're truly blessed as Erin is still with us. But you know what? The way she faces each day's challenges, head on without complaint, it's a daily reminder to my wife and I that adversity doesn't build character in so much as it seems to reveal it. And I think that's the blessing that we've taken out of all this adversity and the challenges that we experience, is we get to see who we are and who we can be.
March 9th, 1996 was this bad day at the office. Mm-hmm. You were in control in a way.
Yeah.
8 years later to the day, mm-hmm. March 9th, 2004, you and Carrie Watch, your four-month-old daughter, Erin, mm-hmm. have this surgery. So you were not in control.
No.
What do you say to a parent whose young child is going through major surgery right now, fighting for their life?
Take a lot of deep breaths. Be kind to yourself and see how you can influence the event. You're not going to be able to change what's happened, but what you have 100% influence over is how you respond to what's happened. There were times when I was waiting for news with Erin where I was a complete jerk. It didn't help my wife. It didn't help the doctors, the nurses, my other kids. It didn't help Erin. I felt justified in it because life was hard. But then I would catch myself being myself. I'd take a deep breath, take a step back and say, okay, this situation kind of stinks, but what can I do to help it?
We're talking to Paul Templer. He and his wife have three children, Erin, Jack, great name, and Kate. And just imagine, friends, if they got to go bring somebody for show and tell to school, who better than to bring their dad and have him talk about the bad day at the office? Paul Templer. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WGR.
Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Paul Templer, a real-life, modern-day Crocodile Dundee. Paul, there is a famous TV evangelist out of Garden Grove, California, the Crystal Cathedral, the Hour of Power, Robert Schuller. He's written a lot of books. One was Tough Times Never Last, But Tough People Do. And these are tough times for a lot of people. What do you say about tough times never last, but tough people do?
As you ask the question, I think about all the tough people in my life, and it's been the support cast, my wife, my kids, my parents, my friends. It's the people who help us through these tough times. And occasionally it becomes our privilege to be the person who gets to help others through these tough times. So your question evokes a smile, Jack. I would agree wholeheartedly. I think that's something I'm going to take away. Find opportunities where I can be that tough person in tough times to help.
You met Carrie and you marry her in Detroit. So how does a one-armed safari guide make a living in Detroit? You know, you made a living off the Zambezi River. This ain't the Detroit River, ain't no Zambezi River.
Right.
We do have the Zamboni down at Joe Louis, but how do you make a living today?
Right. Well, Jack, when I got married to Carrie, I quickly found out there wasn't a huge demand for one-armed safari guides in Detroit. And this spurred me on to go and reinvent my future. And so I came up with a plan. I wrote it down, and through a series of actions, life has turned out pretty well. At the moment, I'm very blessed. I get to travel around the world speaking, a keynote, coaching organizations that are going through change, dealing with adversity. And I have a small foundation based here in Michigan. We get to help people all around the world. So I seem to find ways to fill my day.
Tell us about Make a Difference.
Right. Make a Difference came about shortly after my hippo attack. And our original charter was to help kids and folks who had stood on landmines in southern Africa. That was the original charter. Over the years, it's evolved. It's currently called the Templar Foundation. And our mandate has grown somewhat. And we work with and support terminally ill kids and disabled kids around the world, helping them and their families to live. And then when the time comes for the child to die with dignity.
How do we learn more?
If you go onto the web, there's templarfoundation.org.
T-E-M-P-L-E-R. Templarfoundation.org.
Indeed.
You give a lot of speeches all over the world. You're a great storyteller. What's the basic message of your speech?
We're all going to have a bad day at the office or in life. And in those instances, whatever happens next, that's entirely up to us. We're truly the sum of our choices. We're exactly who, what, and where we choose to be in life. And with that orientation, the world is just filled with possibilities and opportunities.
You've learned to surrender to God. We've had a number of such people as guests, and the peacefulness and the serenity of each one of those people screams through the airwaves, you included. How does one learn to surrender to God? Other than being in an 8,000-pound bull hippo's throat.
I mean, a few glib answers, but real answers show up through the grace of God, doing His will, the love of a good woman, the support of a family, but it's also being accountable for it, making a series of choices that are consistent with what I'm committed to, taking care of myself and those I care and love.
If there's a listener tonight who says, I'm in depression, I'll admit it.
Mm-hmm.
I have no energy. I don't have a will to live. You know, the future's gone.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to that listener?
I say, take a deep breath. And then just do a couple of simple things, but actually do them. Find something to be grateful for, someone to go and thank. And find someone to be kind to. Do those three things. Take a deep breath, and then go back to step one.
One of your latest initiatives is producing healthy food in Detroit. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. We're engaging in a social enterprise program here in Detroit where we're working with local government, local communities, local NGOs to provide an environment where we can grow healthy food, where we can put people to work, where we can address the paradoxical issue of childhood malnutrition and obesity, where we can enable folks who maybe have lost the opportunity to live with dignity and see that they have choices, to be reminded of that and to live more consistently with who they can be.
I believe, Paul Templer, that we're in a fight for the soul of America. You and Carrie have three young children, Aaron, Jack, Kate. Is America's best days behind it or in front of it?
Oh, the best days are ahead, Jack. I firmly believe that. I've lived here for the last 12 years now, and every day I'm inspired by the people of this country. And sure, we're going through tough times, but this is when we find out what we're truly made of. And We have the capacity, we have the competence, we have the willpower, we have the support, we have the belief, we have the confidence. I have no doubt that a bright future lays ahead.
And from somebody that's only been here in Southeast Michigan for a dozen years, what do you see as the future of Southeast Michigan and Michigan?
I see we're going to have to refocus our attention. We have this great capacity to manufacture. The world's always going to need things, gizmos. Manufacturing will stay where it is, but we're going to become more environmentally conscious, more environmentally aware, more environmentally focused. And we're going to put the people back to work. I believe we're going to become a more caring society too. Hopefully this has knocked us back and helps us focus on what's really important to us.
Last question, Paul Templer, as our time winds down together. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
That moving with integrity, that there being consistency between what you think, what you say, what you do, and taking care of the identity and the dignity of others is the surest way I've yet to come across to bring about success. That if you find a way to live with gratitude and to, I know as corny as it sounds, just to do the next right thing, I think all of our futures will be a whole lot brighter. And that's an approach that I've taken, and myself and my colleagues, we've worked with teams as diversely as amateur, pro, and extreme athletes, military, including special forces, corporate giants around the world. It truly is that simple. That seems to be the pathway to success.
Paul Templer, what a chap you are, and what an inspiration you are. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks for coming. It's been an honor to have you.
Thanks very much, Jack. It's been an honor to be here.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.